Live from the Play Show Yet Not Overly Ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome to a Football Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. And geez, you guys are really zoomed in on me on YouTube right out of the gate. I thought I was about to have a little bit of a voice crack when I look to the right and I start doing the Football Friday. It maybe looks like I'm in the bathroom to start out this show. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. All righty. Let's get going right out of the gate with the Denver Broncos. I think it's pretty clear what's happening in Denver right now, because Sean Payton is considered to be a great coach, and he's been the complete antithesis of that ever since going to the Denver Broncos. And he's doing things that, quite frankly, doesn't make sense. He's throwing his quarterback under the bus publicly. He is trading away or cutting players that have done some pretty significant things before in this league. At least they have a reputation of being good players. And last night, he made a boneheaded decision where he called a timeout because he forgot what down it was, and then that led to a Kansas City Chiefs field goal. And I'm watching the game last night, and I start to think about the Broncos having their first-round pick this year, and I'm saying to myself, looks like Sean's tanking. Looks like he is tanking to go get Caleb Williams. And if that's the case, and I know that's a really slippery slope to play, I think it's the right decision. Because you have to know, if you're a Broncos fan, that Russell Wilson isn't the guy. He's not what he used to be. So now moving forward, you have all these draft picks that you traded away, and then you also went on out and gave Russell Wilson a lucrative extension. It's one thing to make those moves, and it's another thing to keep on doubling down with that incompetence. And Russell Wilson is just not a great quarterback anymore. And then there's this hope, and there's this dream, and there's this thought that Caleb Williams is not only going to be a great player for years to come, but he's going to be a generational player, where you are having him compared to Patrick Mahomes. And when I asked him about that at the Heisman Trophy last year, he was like, there's nothing that Patrick Mahomes does on the field that I see that I can't do. So he's embracing the confidence, and he's embracing the hype train that is stemming from all the analysis that we've done over the last year, year and a half, when it comes to Caleb Williams. And the Denver Broncos should absolutely try to go get the number one overall pick. And I usually say that players don't tank, coaches don't tank. It's organizations that tank with ownership and general managers. But we all know Sean right now is the most important person in that organization. And when I do the math and I see this guy that is such a pride and such a proud and a good coach, and historically has been such a good coach, it makes me scratch my head over and over again when I look at the results on the field. And I didn't think much of the Broncos before this year, but they're not even like competitive. And their offense, which doesn't have a lot of talent, it's moving at a snail's pace, and it just looks terrible. So if this is the grand plan by Sean Payton, where you got to take it on the chin for a year, you got to get dragged nationally, you got to do things that doesn't really make sense to the common football fan, I don't believe this is the wrong strategy. And I actually think this is the right strategy, because you have a lot of teams now that are going to realize we're not moving in the right direction. So how do you expedite that process? You got to get the right quarterback. Like, look at the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals forever under Marvin Lewis were stuck on just being a playoff team. And then each and every year, death taxes, wild card weekend, the Cincinnati Bengals would lose on wild card weekend. Then you bring in new coaches, and those coaches didn't have the best talent in the world in a Zach Taylor, and it was ugly from the start. But then you drafted your savior in Joe Burrow, who was a Heisman Trophy winner, who was undefeated as a quarterback in his final season at LSU, orchestrated one of the best offenses and one of the best seasons that we've ever seen from a quarterback in the history of college football, and catapulted himself from pretty much an unknown, even though he was Mr. Ohio at one point and was at Ohio State, but from an unknown in his first year at LSU to then in year number two, he shoots right up the draft board all the way up to the number one spot and then changed the direction of the Cincinnati Bengals, where when he's finally playing and he wasn't injured, Super Bowl loss to the LA Rams, and then the next year goes to an AFC title game. So that's what the Broncos need to do now, where, yes, you have to figure out how you get better at wide receiver. You know, who's going to excel moving forward on the defense, because the defense has done a 180, and it went from being a really good defense to a horrible defense, and I'm going to assume at the end of this year, Vance Joseph is going to be sent packing, and they'll bring in a new defensive coordinator. Maybe Rex Ryan, who wanted this job, didn't get the job, and is still complaining on ESPN about not getting the job when he looks at the way that this defense is performing. But it all circles back when you go through the math and you look at this team and you view the bad performance right now. Their intention has to be to try to go get this number one overall pick. And you're going to have a lot of teams that right now are stuck in knowing that they're a bad team. And it's weird in the NFL because you can't say you're tanking. No teams are going to admit you're tanking. But you don't want to be, for example, a team like the Jets that we thought a few years ago were all going to get Trevor Lawrence. Then they win a game late in the year, and the next thing you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars gets Trevor Lawrence, and that changes the direction of their franchise as well. So you're going to have a bunch of teams, because it's not as just if you know a quarterback's going one. Because some years quarterbacks go one, and we go, oh, he may become a great player, like Bryce Young last year. We looked at Bryce Young. Some people were concerned about his size or lack of it. And then others said, oh, well, look what he did at Alabama when Alabama didn't have a lot of talent last year. And he put up a pretty impressive season. But there was a thought Bryce Young could be a great player. With Caleb Williams, ask anybody, it's not just, oh, he's a great player. He's a generational player. He's a changing of a franchise type of player, which what you want when you're picking number one overall. And people could say, oh, he's the next Mahomes, or he'll do to a franchise what Andrew Luck did early on to the Indianapolis Colts, or Peyton Manning did to the Indianapolis Colts as well. And with how great this guy is supposed to be, I don't fault any team for saying, yeah, let's try to go lose games this year and let's try to change the direction of our franchise. So let's just examine right now. And I know that this is very, very early, but let's examine right now the teams that you feel have a realistic shot to go get Caleb Williams. We start with the Broncos. They got one win right now, and I don't know when they're going to get their next win. Because what you see from Sean right now is a quarterback and a coach having a little back and forth, and Sean throwing the quarterback under the bus. And if that's what we see, it's got to be a whole lot worse internally. You got Jerry Jeudy before the game getting into it with Steve Smith. It's like just some of the things that are going on with the Denver Broncos right now just displays that they're a clown show. And when you're bad and you're a football player, like two things happens. One, you just like kind of tune out and go, oh, this is it. I'm checked out in the season. Or two, you're like, all right, I'm a player that isn't a really good player in this league. Let me take advantage of this opportunity to go show that I belong here or somewhere else for years to come. But I do believe that the Denver Broncos are trying to get this number one overall pick. And if they get the number one overall pick, they'll figure out what to do with the contract with Russell Wilson. And they'll go out there and they'll draft Caleb Williams. The Patriots, that's a team that needs Caleb Williams as well. And I said this to start the week. I hope my Patriots don't win a game for the rest of the year. And I hope that's good enough to go get Caleb Williams. And then Bill Belichick needs to realize once you get Caleb Williams, you have to do what you failed to do with Mac Jones. And that surrounds your young quarterback with actual talent. The Arizona Cardinals, they've been gritty, they've been respectable, but with that being said, they only have one win still. So they're in the market with their own pick, and then they also have the Houston Texans pick, which I don't think is going to be the number one overall pick, because the Texans are off to a good start for them at 2-3, but that is ammunition, where if let's just say a team that doesn't need a quarterback ends up getting the number one pick, maybe you could find a way to orchestrate a trade having two picks that we perceive to be at least two top 10, two top 15 picks for the Arizona Cardinals this year. The Chicago Bears. The Bears right now have to be genuflecting that they traded from 1 down to 8 with the Carolina Panthers. Because Bryce Young, I think, is getting ruined by the Carolina Panthers right now. But with that being said, you didn't have to draft Bryce Young. You wanted to roll another year with Justin Fields. Justin Fields, the last 2 weeks, to his credit, is playing well. And then from there, it's like, okay, can you salvage Justin Fields? But if you play poorly yourself, you could get the number one overall pick, or you have the insurance of the Panthers, who are by far and away the worst team in the league right now, and they don't even have a win through the first 5 weeks of the season. And the Carolina Panthers, if they continue to be really bad, which I don't see any optimism for that team this year, you get the best of both worlds, where you could get the number one overall pick from the Panthers, then maybe be a few spots better than what you thought if the Bears play well. You're still going to be picking in the top five. Maybe you get a Marvin Harrison Jr., a wide receiver. And then you make that decision to, if you draft Caleb Williams, to then trade Justin Fields. And if Fields plays decently the rest of the year, you're going to get something significant back from a draft capital perspective for Justin Fields. The Vikings, that's a team that I don't believe anyone would have thought before the year we would have been talking about them with the number one overall pick, but they got talent. They got Addison out of USC and Pitt. They got Justin Jefferson as well. Kirk Cousins, he's coming to the end of his final year of his contract. They only got one win right now. Could you imagine if the Minnesota Vikings get the number one overall pick? They get Caleb Williams to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson and Addison. Ooh, that would be a whole lot of fun. And then here's another team that we knew that would regress. And we'll wrap it here. We knew this team would regress. With that being said, though, we didn't know they would fall flat on their faces. And that's the Giants. I know the Giants just committed to Daniel Jones. It was a 3-year deal. You can get out of that very easily. The deal structure by Joe Shane, the general manager, it was a smart deal structure by him. But if you look at it for Daniel Jones and the Giants, who cares? You get Caleb Williams, you get rid of Daniel Jones. And Carlos Ortiz is producing the extravaganza today along with Stuart Kovacs. And when I mentioned his Giants, Carlos Ortiz is like, please, 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 pretty please. Let's go get Daniel Jones, the New York Giants. That's what Carlos Ortiz is saying. So those are the teams that I think are in the market right now to go get the number one overall pick. The Broncos, the Pats, the Cardinals, the Bears, the Vikings, and the Giants. Those would be the six teams that have a really good chance to go get Caleb Williams. Now let's just play some sound here real quickly. This is Sean Payton last night. He takes the blame for the timeout that was called late in the first half, and he explained why he did it.
Yeah, listen, and that's a boneheaded mistake by me. They were calling one as well, and I'm off a down, but that was stupid.
It was stupid. How do you forget the down, and then you take a timeout, and you help the Kansas City Chiefs then set up that crazy 60-yard field goal before the end of the half? And then this was on Fox from last year where Sean was an analyst for Fox, and this is Sean Payton talking about Caleb Williams, and then a year later, I think this is very interesting audio.
I think he's a generational player. Now, I've seen 3 or 4 games, obviously not as much as I would if I was truly doing the evaluation. But at some point, especially with the relationship our league has in gaming now, at some point we're going to move to a lottery system in the NFL. Because this is a player that possibly does that, where at the end of the season, here you are in week, call it 14, 12, and clubs begin to lose to try to put themselves in that position. This player, I think, is the type of player that we would look back on in 5 years and say, he's why the lottery exists now.
So that's basically someone that used to be a coach that then turned into an analyst that now is coaching again, is now in a position where last year he openly admitted teams are going to tank for Caleb Williams. So last night when you see these boneheaded decisions and really a boneheaded start to his tenure with the Denver Broncos, you're like, is this intentional? And I don't just think it's a coincidence. Like, I look at what Sean's doing right now, and I think this is a strategic decision by him to be as bad as possible this year, ruin that relationship with Russell Wilson, get rid of some really talented players, and give himself the best chance possible to get that number one overall pick so he could find his next Drew Brees, hopefully his next Hall of Fame quarterback. And people are saying that Caleb Williams is a generational player because you either have a quarterback in this league or you don't. And moving forward, I don't think Russell Wilson is going to be a successful quarterback for the rest of Sean's tenure. So he's looking at this and he's saying, I got to go get the one that everyone's going for right now in Caleb Williams. And if that's intentional, and if that's tanking the way that I think it is, I know we could all say, oh, you shouldn't do that, the integrity of the game. But it's actually smart by Sean, because then no one's complaining in Denver if you get Caleb Williams and you're a contender for years to come. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. We'll come on back. Do you think the Broncos are tanking? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll preview a little Washington and Oregon coming up tomorrow in just a bit. Fun college football slate tomorrow featuring Notre Dame hosting USC and then Washington hosting Oregon, two of the better games of the weekend. But first, we open up the show talking about the Denver Broncos and how it looks like they're tanking right now. If it looks like they're tanking and it feels like they're tanking and they play like they're tanking, well, they probably are tanking. And it would be really smart if the Broncos continue to do this, because then they could go walk away with Caleb Williams and have some piece to move forward at the quarterback position, because it's wild. Ever since number 18 and Peyton Manning walked out of that building and won that Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos in Santa Clara, as it was Broncos and Panthers in Super Bowl 50, they have brought in so many quarterbacks. And they have not only all played poorly, but they've all been massive failures. And this was supposed to be different because they get Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson has just crapped the bed through his first year and change with the Denver Broncos. And now the question just becomes, when do the Broncos split from Russell Wilson? And it could be as soon at the end of this season, or maybe by the end of next season at the absolute latest. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Love Portland, Oregon. Let's go out to Kevin, who's calling in from Portland right now. Kev, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Zach?
Doing great.
So I've been a Seahawks fan for quite some time. I watched Russell Wilson, who missed a handful of games in 10 years. He will not change. There was a period in Seattle where he clearly dropped off. I don't know if it was just losing that explosiveness in the pocket, but the offense in Seattle just went stagnant. I was like, all right, next year will be better. All right, you know, every quarterback's allowed an off year. Next year will be better. It just didn't happen. He gets injured on his throwing arm. Geno Smith comes in. The offense just started moving again. It just like that. So whatever happened, he's lost it. He's fallen off. He's gone. So, you know, I thank the Denver Broncos very much for Devin Witherspoon and the other two players they gave us. But it's time to move on, guys, because it ain't happening.
Devin, great phone call. And when I look back at Russ's time towards the end in Seattle, there was a big debate. Is Russ holding on to the football too long, or was the offensive line just really bad? And early on, because you looked at how many times Russell Wilson was getting sacked, everyone just easily assumed it was the offensive line's fault. And that offensive line, to be fair, was not great in Seattle. But then there was numbers, and then there was situations that were presented to us, and it was like, whoa, it's a little mixture of both, and more so him hanging on to the football more than I thought. So that started to change, but even that, you didn't think he would go from being this really good quarterback to now like the punchline of every joke around the NFL, where it's almost sad as to what Russell Wilson has become. So yes, he is declining, but I don't think him just declining should have been to this level where he went from being really good to now just being terrible and looking like a bum on a football field. But what happened was, and this is sometimes the biggest fall of a human being, is ego. And his hubris was wild here, where Pete Carroll was his biggest supporter. He turned on Pete Carroll. And not only that, his grand plan and his big scheme was to wind up in Denver, where you don't have DK Metcalf, you don't have Tyler Lockett, and you had another very questionable offensive line. What Russell Wilson did had to be one of the greatest miscalculations in the history of sports. And I would say I feel bad for him, but you kind of are getting what you deserve because you had something really good in Seattle and it wasn't good enough for you. You had to focus on becoming this icon and Russell Wilson, the brand, Russell Wilson, the celebrity, where when you went on the Dan Patrick show and started all this nonsense, remember, it was, I'm sick and tired of being at the Super Bowl every year as a spectator. I want to be playing. Well, maybe you should stop focusing on all those other things and focus what's going on the field. Because on the field, it's a mess. And on the field, he's still pointing fingers. And it seems like there's no accountability there. So this has been a bleep show. There's no other way to put it. This has been a disaster. There's disasters, and then whatever is worse than a disaster, that's what's happening right now with the Denver Broncos. And I sometimes like to be optimistic. I sometimes like to say, okay, let's be a problem solver. Let's solve this crappy situation. Let's build it back up. I don't think there's any building back up. I think Kevin's right. I think he's done. And you look at his stats last night. If I would have told you, 13 to 22 for 95 yards, a touchdown and two picks. What game are you watching? Flag football? High school football game? High school quarterback? Oh, no, that was an NFL quarterback last night. And look at the team. Like, you're throwing to Cortland Sutton, who made a great catch. That's the only reason why you got a touchdown. Is Jerry Jeudy, like, the most overrated player ever? I keep on being told that Jerry Jeudy, oh, he's this number one wide receiver. Oh, you had to draft him in the first round. He's going to be a sensational player. And Jerry Jeudy was really good at Alabama. But just because you're really good in college doesn't translate into NFL success. And does anybody think more highly of themselves than Jerry Jeudy still? I want to play you some of this. Because Steve Smith is a legend. Steve Smith is someone that should already be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I guess Steve Smith and Jerry Jeudy had a previous back and forth where Steve, which I give him credit, some players, they don't like to be a critical analyst because they're afraid of what people are going to think about them. But this is Steve Smith where he was critical in the past of one Jerry Jeudy. I guess he tried to apologize to him the other night, and it was a bleep show. This is Steve Smith on the NFL Network last night.
I'm sorry that I said you were a jag, just a guy who's an average wide receiver that you use a first-round pick on that isn't doing anything. I hope today that you actually show up in a way that you haven't showed up in the last couple years since they drafted you. So if you ever got a problem with Agent 89, I'm sorry for saying that you're an average wide receiver that they eventually will move on. And when teams call me and asking, should they trade for you? I will say no, don't trade for Jerry Jeudy because he's mentally unable to handle constructive criticism from people who watch specifically, can he be a wide receiver? He could be a wide receiver. He's a tier three.
Tier three. We may need to lower that a little bit more after last night. Jerry Jeudy had three receptions for 14 yards. And this all started because Steve Smith, I guess, before the game tried to go over to him, and then Jerry Jeudy gave him a lot of attitude and was trying to basically, like, fight Steve Smith. So that said, and I guess it quickly got to Jerry Jeudy, and Jerry Jeudy, in another pregame hit for Steve Smith, is, like, dancing in the background. He's making a bunch of noise to, like, get under the skin of Steve Smith. Jerry Jeudy, you may think you're tough. Steve Smith is a whole different level of tough. That dude is a guy that should have a bus reserve in Canton, Ohio, and he was one tough wide receiver in the NFL. You can't even sit at the same table as him, because there is, like, levels of greatness. You're begging to get into the restaurants that Steve Smith gets into, right? Steve Smith has the hookup everywhere you go. You're saying, hey, can you, you know, I'm this guy, I do this, I do that. You're a pimple on the you-know-what of the great Steve Smith. Here is Jerry Jeudy after the game, where he had to be like a scared puppy dog after the way that he ran his mouth before the game and everything that did transpire with Steve Smith. And then you put up three receptions for 14 yards and you basically pretended like that whole kerfuffle with him and Steve Smith never existed.
Jerry, a little bit of drama before the game with Steve Smith Sr. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that right now.
Man, that was a tough loss, man. I feel like at the end of the game, I feel like we could have got there, but You know, they had a good drive at the end.
Jerry, Steve Smith said he had some kind of conversation with you before the game. Did that not go well, or based on what he said on air on NFL Network?
I don't remember that. You know, but like I said, you know, it was a close game. We just got to finish at the end of the game.
Now he turned into Roger Clemens. Did you do steroids? I misremembered. That's what he did. Well, what happened before the game? We all saw it. It's not as if there isn't social media now, and if they're not live TV cameras, everyone saw that something did happen between him and Steve Smith. Yeah, nothing to see here. Because he knows he's in the wrong. And I know players before a game get to a different, like, level, and you have to focus in, and you get to mentally a different state. But if that's true that Steve Smith, and I don't know if it is, but if it's true that all he did was walk over and said, hey, I'm critical in the past of you, you turned out to be a good player, which he really hasn't been. He's been a disappointment most of his career. That's why I'm surprised at the whole Steve Smith thing. And then if he basically told him to just bleep off, and then you're dancing behind him and yelling during his pregame hit, you don't look good. And if you're Jerry Jeudy, you can only have a measly 14 yards in the game, even if your quarterback sucks right now. You have to play better than that. So that was something, you always tune into to a football game. And there's things that you expect, and then there's things that you never know could even happen. That was one of those things last night. I did not have that on my bingo card, that Steve Smith and Jerry Jeudy were going to have a fight, and Jerry Jeudy took a massive L last night. Real quickly, Washington, Oregon this weekend. This is the game that I'm most excited for. Kalen DeBoer going up against Dan Lanning. You have Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. as well. This is a big Heisman moment for both these quarterbacks. And it's crazy that how similar of a road both these quarterbacks have traveled. Because when Bo Nix was at Auburn, he's supposed to be really good and never met up to that hype. And then you look at Michael Penix Jr. outside of that touchdown that Penn State fans were like, he was down and he probably was down up against Indiana, but he scored. There was no really great moments for Michael Penix Jr. at Indiana. And also, Michael Penix Jr. had to suffer a lot of injuries. And when both these guys transfer, Bo Nix going from Auburn to Oregon, and Michael Penix Jr., who did play for Kalen DeBoer when DeBoer was at Indiana for that 1 year, and he goes to Washington, there was no expectations. And last year they laid a foundation where all throughout the year it was like, expect the Indiana version of Michael Penix Jr. or expect the Bo Nix version at Auburn to pop up in their new homes, and they never did. They never popped up. And they have both now solidified themselves as not only really good quarterbacks, but quarterbacks that have NFL aspirations and also Heisman Trophy aspirations this year. And Michael Penix Jr. was could have been a finalist for the Heisman Trophy last year and came up just short. But I look back at both of these quarterbacks and now to see where they are, the winner of this game, there's going to be even more of a Heisman push, and maybe they end up meeting up a few weeks from now back in the Pac-12 championship game, and you could have another Heisman moment there for either Washington or Oregon. But you look at the Heisman chase right now, definitely Jordan Travis at Florida State is in the mix. Dylan Gabriel after last weekend is in the mix. We know Caleb Williams is the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. He's in the mix. And the winner of this game, you can make case of Georgia. It's Brock Bowers too, the tight end. But quarterbacks, non-quarterbacks usually don't win this award unless you're a running back. But whoever wins this game, and Penix has had a great season, Bo Nix has had a great season, they're already in the mix. This will be the tiebreaker that will shoot them up the leaderboard for the Heisman Trophy. And I can't wait to see both those offenses go at it coming up tomorrow in the afternoon. All right, we'll come on back. We'll chat it up with Willie Colon, the former NFL offensive lineman. Does a great job as an analyst for Fox and SNY. He'll join us on the other side. But first up with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here is the Ackman, Rich Acker. All right, we continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Let's go out to the guest line right now. Welcome in a man that is now an analyst at Fox, also SNY, played with the Steelers and the Jets, and that's former NFL offensive lineman and Willie Colon. You know, it's weird to say he's an analyst at Fox because he's the co-host with Craig Carton, who used to work inside this building. And Willie, I know working with Craig for so many years, that means Craig just makes you eat a whole lot more than you probably want to with the amount of food connections he has.
Oh, man. I can't blame, Craig on my weight gain. That's all me. I'm a foodie at heart, man. Craig just happens to match my energy when it comes to food and enjoying having a good time, man. I love him. It's been an absolute a gem of experience. He's, you know, I get to witness the magic of Craig Carton every day, and I'm blessed for it.
So I'm watching the game last night, and when I'm seeing just the incompetence of the Broncos and all the boneheaded decisions by Sean Payton, I say to myself, this looks like they're tanking to go get Caleb Williams. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy narrative to have. The problem is, you know, Sean Payton was brought in that building to be the difference maker. You know, all I've ever heard out of Sean Payton thus far is a bunch of complaints and problems and no solutions. Valid. Russell Wilson isn't even the problem. Valid, he didn't have a good game last night with only one touchdown and two interceptions. But overall, this is a bad outfit from top to bottom. And Sean Payton was supposed to be the guy, so to speak, to come in and clean things up, get Russell Wilson on track, let this offense come alive. And Vance Joseph, the defense is just atrocious. You talk about Randy Gregory leaving, and now he's a nine. You talk about the secondary hasn't been able to perform up to standard, and they're not able to get after their quarterback with their pass rush. So they have a lot of deficiencies on both sides of the ball. And Sean Payton right now, he has to figure out what's the future for the Denver Broncos, and I don't think he has an answer right now.
And you go to the next team, the Kansas City Chiefs, they were playing last night. We all know how great they can be, and their offense still hasn't been in sync yet. And we all look at the AFC and talk about how it's open. I'd be kind of surprised if the Chiefs don't find a way to get this thing figured out on offense and wind up in the Super Bowl again.
You know, as of right now, I don't see them winning the Super Bowl, flat out. You talk about last night having 4 out of 5 red zone trips, only coming away with one touchdown. That's not the Kansas City Chiefs that we've known to grow and love, so to speak. Patrick Mahomes is always going to be a difference maker, but right now he has only one threat, and that's Travis Kelce. Everybody else is just out there. Valid, Rashee Rice, the rookie, he's playing better. He had 7 catches yesterday, but overall, this is an offense you expect to average at least 30 points a game. They have yet to do that. So, and they obviously they had that one, game against the Bears where they have 41 points, but out of that, if that game doesn't happen, they're in the bottom half of this league in scoring, and that's not Chiefs football, if you would. That's not Andy Reid football, as we know to love. So there's a lot of issues right now. I think when the trade deadline comes, if they can somehow make a push to get Davante Adams out of Las Vegas and get Patrick Mahomes a true number one receiver, things will turn around. But right now, he's still trying to figure out what he has on that offensive side of the ball outside of Travis Kelce.
Talking to Willie Colon right now. All right, let's talk about some of your former teams. We'll start with the Jets. The popular thing is to throw out maybe a Kirk Cousins trade to New York. I just don't think that is likely. Where do you stand on that, and do you just feel as if it's going to be Zach Wilson's team for the rest of the season?
I think it's going to be Zach Wilson's team. In reference to Kirk Cousins, his contract is up in March. You know, if I'm Kirk Cousins and you're looking for a new deal and a new outfit, won't you just pad the stats? They're not going to the playoffs. Justin Jefferson is out. But he's still playing high-octane football. Now, you know, the Minnesota Vikings have 12 turnovers. They need to be better in that category. But Kirk Cousins is still throwing the football at a great rate. He's still making plays. He's explosive. So if I'm him, stay put, pad the stats, and then realize when March is over, you're going to have a great opportunity to play for somebody, hopefully a playoff contender.
You know how passionate that Steeler fan base is. Right now, everyone wants the offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, out. What are you seeing right now with the Steelers' offense?
You know, I'm seeing a ball club that just lacks identity. Obviously, their defense is always going to be top tier because of T.J. Watt and some of the pass rushers they have. But the loss of Cameron Haywood has hurt them. You know, I know Cam personally. He was my little brother when I was a Steeler. And he embodies the Steeler culture through and through. But nevertheless, man, from the offensive side, you know, Kenny Pickett isn't as advertised. We thought the preseason, we thought he was going to be one of these guys. You say, oh, wow, here he comes. He has arrived. That has yet to happen. Pickett, you know, you talk about Allen Robinson, George Pickens. You talk about all these other weapons that we assume were going to be a legit threat for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Has it come into fruition? I think Jaylen Warren is probably the one bright spot on that offense that you say, you got something there. But overall, they just need to score. They haven't been able to score. And this defense has really been able to kind of pull out some wins. With the Steelers right now, it's just a matter of going back to the brand of football that we know them to have, being able to run the ball and play behind their defense and win games. They've done that half of the part. Now, if you go back to that Baltimore game, Baltimore just fumbled the bag, so to speak. You have as many drops as they had, and the fashion in which they had it, you're going to lose ball games. And when you go against a scrappy outfit in the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're going to find a way to win, and they did. But overall, man, they're going to have to figure out what's going on with Kenny Pickett. How can they get this offense to come alive? You won't count your blessings in one thing. Mike Tomlin is going to figure it out. That's what he does well. He adjusts as well. He's going to figure out how to get this team to be what they need to be, especially as we get longer into the season. But the Steelers are, you know, they're just kind of in limbo right now. They're kind of going through it.
What would you say to Steelers fans that are starting to lose faith in Mike Tomlin? Because you just said it. He's going to find a way to figure it out. But for the first time in a while, there's a lot of more vocal Steelers fans saying maybe he's no longer the guy in Pittsburgh.
Well, because I think they're starting to question the standard, right? And the standard has always been Super Bowl bust, bottom line. We've never played for division titles. We never played to make the playoffs. Every season, that has been a given. Thus far, we haven't been back to the Super Bowl since 2010 or 2011 when I was on the team. And so right now, you're looking at a fan base who's used to excellence, right? It's no different how the Yankees fans expect the Yankees to go to the World Series every year. You know, there's just it comes with it. Like when you talk about particular ball clubs, you don't talk about playoffs and division titles. It's either championships or we're not talking at all. So they're growing weary. But trust and believe, Mike Tomlin is always going to keep this outfit ready. And if they're not ready, he's going to figure it out. You talk about prior to the Baltimore game, you know, they put on the pads and they kept the pads on for majority of the week because he understands one thing that Pittsburgh Steelers do, they play physical football. And I felt like against the Texans, they weren't as physical. They got beat up a little bit. And you talk about losing to a rookie quarterback in C.J. Stroud, that can't happen when you have that type of talent on that type of team and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I think Mike Tomlin is still trying to work with this group, but they're going to get it. One thing about the Pittsburgh Steelers, they kind of sneak up on you, especially late in the season. When everybody's beat up, they start getting better because they're built for the grind. So I'm not really worried about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think Kenny Pickett just needs to pick it up, and they got to start scoring some touchdowns.
You think this is it for Belichick in New England, or he'll be back as the head coach next year, Willie Colon?
I think this is it. To be honest, Robert Kraft has been vocal about, you know, this team not winning playoff games or making it to the playoffs, which they haven't been in a while. It's about Super Bowls. And I think right now, Bill Belichick is probably one of the best coaches of all time. You put him right up there next to Vince Lombardi and Don Shula, sure. The problem is what Bill Belichick is that a lot of the answers we thought were the answers hasn't happened, right? When you let go of Josh McDaniels, you say, all right, bring in Bill O'Brien. He's going to connect with Mac Jones. The offense is going to be better. And that hasn't happened. Once Mac Jones lost Jacoby Myers, he didn't have a security blanket anymore. You're talking about Mac Jones starting the season. He's trailed in every game he's played in, and he's only gotten worse. This defense, you talk about losing Christian Gonzalez at the cornerback position, a rookie who's playing extremely well. He's gone with ACL. You talk about Judon getting hurt with a bicep. They just don't look like the New England Patriots. And one thing you know about Bill Belichick, or at least what we assumed, is not only is he an authoritarian, but he also knows how to adjust. He's the biggest brain in the building. And we haven't seen that type of action or that type of progress happen yet with the New England Patriots. And so for me, watching Mac Jones and watching this outfit all together, man, they just like they're playing high-octane bad football across the board. There's nothing on tape that makes you say, that there's a bright spot. And you're watching a struggling Mac Jones who seems like he wants out of New England. He doesn't even want to be there anymore. So that's troubling considering he's such a young quarterback. But I think Bill right now, it's two things. If he steps aside and it just focuses on being a coach and not the GM, or him and Robert Kraft say, hey, man, it's been fun. Best of luck to you in the future. And they part ways.
And it's so mystifying because everything you just laid out with Belichick, it was like last year, okay, you're trusting a special teams guy and a defensive guy to run your offense. And then this year, you bring in Bill O'Brien, wonderful, but you could only go so far if you just have an offensive coordinator. And there's no talent. There's not a single Patriot wide receiver right now that if I was a defender, I'm like, oh, we got to stay up late at night to prepare for this guy on the Patriot offense.
100%. And the thing about Bill Belichick, he's always had a developmental system, right? You've always kind of had to say whatever guy he brought into the building, whether they had a name or not, there was always something you had to trust in him because you trust Bill Belichick in his eye.
But you can do that when Brady's your quarterback. When you don't have Brady, you can't just have developmental people.
100%. But now all that's kind of unraveling. So now you're starting to question, was Bill it or was Brady it, right? And now that those answers are starting to, you don't have to look around no more. You say, oh, there's a problem here, right? Bill maybe not have been the guy. It's because Tom Brady masked all the deficiency this team was lacking at the time. So I'm looking at this Patriots team moving forward, man. Bill looks like a guy who's over his skis for the first time in his career. And I think we're witnessing it. And I think I say this, man, and Zach, you know sports. For a lot of this younger generation, they only know Brady. They only know Tom. But their grandfathers and uncles and fathers know the Patriots when they were god-awful, right?
My uncle is one of them. And from Framingham, Massachusetts, they have four tickets. They get 15 people into the games.
Right. So now you have you have the old head, so to speak, saying, I told you. It was only a matter of time. And so now they're talking to the young heads in the family saying, man, we were around when the Patriots sucked.
Yeah.
When they were god awful. Now you get the experience, but we experienced most of our lives. So it's trouble in New England. I think the best way to go about it is saying, Bill, we love you. We thank you. We'll put a statue outside the stadium. We'll put you in the Ring of Honor. Obviously, you're a Hall of Famer. But it's time to go fishing, and we see you down the road. Maybe on the sports desk as an analyst.
We're going to look at this play here, and we're going to analyze this. And we'll sit back, and we'll talk more with Willie Colon at another date. But, Willie, great stuff. Keep up the great work with Fox and SMY. I always appreciate you would jump on board with us.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. God bless.
There he is, Willie Colon, joining us right here on CBS Sports Radio with the Zach Gelb Show. And he makes a lot of good points, man. You know, the more and more I think about this, even as a Patriot fan, the more and more I start to say to myself, feels like it's time to move on from Bill Belichick, even though that's tough to do. And then you look at the Steelers. This is right now on the Steeler fan. They say it's on Canada. Eventually, that's going to shift that this is on Kenny Pickett. But then it's like, oh, that wasn't even his play call. He audibled it at the line of scrimmage, and Pickett throws a touchdown. And that gives the Steeler fan more ammunition to say, oh, the offensive coordinator's not right, and there's still belief with the quarterback. Because you blame the coach first, then when you bring in a new coach and the player still stinks, then the player ends up getting the blame. All righty, we'll take a break here. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back. We'll update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio we get to a news brief.